Guardianship situations arise when the law determines that people are unable to care or make decisions for themselves. Disability Rights Oregon has worked with the legislature to add some safeguards to Oregon's guardianship law, but DRO still feels some further refinements are needed, and they will ask for them when the legislature convenes next month. Jan Friedman from DRO visits with details. Good morning, Jan.
Good morning.
Let me ask you just briefly, can you recount what it was like before 1990 and the legislation, or I should say actually the court decision that was made to improve guardianship rules?
So at that time, it was a lot easier for somebody who wanted to get a guardianship to get a guardianship. And of course, some of those were merited and some weren't. The major lack in the pre-1990 guardianship law was due process, meaning that people actually got to find out that they were possibly going to be under a guardianship and had the opportunity to be heard, meaning object and possibly line up an attorney, have a hearing.
And we've seen a number of tweaks regarding guardianship over the years, haven't we?
Yes.
What are some of those things that have been, in your opinion, the most significant?
In terms of, I'm sorry, did you say tweaks or tweets?
Tweaks, not
tweets. Okay, I just wanted to make sure that I was. Okay, yes, tweaks. So some most significant changes have been ensuring the person who might be under guardianship has a clear way to object. So now in the paperwork, the form is actually blue in color. That person also could object by picking up the phone, because some people who might come under guardianship, they're in jail, they're in a state hospital, they're in a coma. A coma, obviously, you can't pick up the phone at that point anyhow. But there's easier access to objecting. There's a court visitor who's the eyes and ears of the court, who goes around and makes a report back to the judges whether or not the guardianship is appropriate. And I think that there's just a greater sense, frankly, that, and this is from very historically, the notion of guardianship was put your arms around this person and protect them, or that they're a public burden and put them in an institution. And now there's a notion that the person who might need help with decision-making is a person and should be supported so that they have the greatest self-reliance and independence.
Is cost a barrier in any situation for someone?
So it depends on who you're talking about. For a person who wants to become a guardian, sometimes the fees for paying for the attorneys can be significant, because it's a fairly complex matter in terms of, and I think this part is appropriate, that everybody should be served with the paperwork who might have an interest. So that's all the close family members or the person who's living with this person. In terms of costs for the person who might end up under guardianship, that also can be incredibly high, because they might be paying for the guardian services and then the attorney services. And yeah, and cost is relative too. I mean, obviously, they're just like everybody across our state. There are people who are under guardianship who have a lot of means, and there's those who have none.
If someone is in a particular mental state, either temporarily or on a more permanent basis, where, I don't know the best way to phrase this, but things are a little fuzzy for them, where decision-making is good, it's bad, it comes, it goes, what do folks do in those kind of situations?
Well, I think in terms of what can be effective, and this would be prior to the person being fuzzy, is setting up less restrictive alternatives. So when somebody is able to decide who they want making their financial decisions, or who they would like to help them with healthcare decisions or other significant decisions, they can designate people and set up the paperwork in advance, and that would prevent guardianship. If that hasn't been done, then there's different ways to support that person. I mean, there's definitely people who have huge spikes in their mental health wellness in terms of it going down, but generally being stable. Mm-hmm. So for a person like that, there could be a declaration for mental health treatment, which is a way that somebody can say, hey, I know that I have this mental health condition. I'm generally stable. I'm working. I'm, you know, part of my life, but I might wind up in the hospital. And at that point, I want you to know that these are the medications that work. These are the ones that don't. And here's the person I want to be my spokesperson because I know they understand what it is that I want.
Plan ahead, in other words.
Exactly. Yep.
We're speaking this morning with Jan Friedman from the Disability Rights Oregon organization. We're talking about guardianship. If you have a question about that, you can join the conversation by calling us at 800-838-3760 or send us an email at jx@jeffnet.org. We're also on Facebook and Twitter. I was going to ask, I believe, as I read, you have some priorities you plan to introduce in this upcoming legislative session. Is that correct?
We do.
And what are those that you're going to share?
Yeah, so basically throughout Disability Rights Oregon's time, we have been introducing different legislation related to guardianship. And the reason that this area interests us so much is because guardianship is a huge intrusion on civil liberties. It's the closest thing that I can see to somebody potentially being imprisoned in civil law if it's not done well. So the pieces, the specific pieces of legislation we're introducing this session, one has to do with a guardian each year, one of their duties is to write an annual report. And in that report, they answer questions such as the person's mental health is, and describe it, and then the person's physical health. A question that's asked is whether or not a guardianship should continue, and a guardian can check no or yes. What we're asking for is if the guardian checks no, that then that triggers a hearing or some further investigation. Because what happens in guardianship cases is once somebody has a guardian and they're called permanent, they keep on the train track until a judge says otherwise.
Hmm.
So it, even if somebody says no, they might, they might continue with the guardian.
Is this something where if a guardian says no under the current process, it takes a long time to get a hearing before a judge, or is this something that, because of the nature of it, moves through the court system fairly quickly?
Well, I think it really varies county to county in terms of what might happen. Because, of course, the bigger counties, they have a designated judge who does guardianship work. In the smaller rural counties, that's not the case. And so if a guardian says no, I mean, it could be a resource issue. Some guardians have a lot of protected people that they're managing, and they might simply not get around to having that guardianship terminated, or maybe they've said no, but they checked the wrong box. You know, I mean, there could be all different reasons for it happening. But basically, you know, that's one thing that we want people to be sure of, too, is to know that even if the guardianship is deemed permanent, and that's what it says on the paperwork, that at any time somebody could move to terminate the guardianship if they no longer need it.
There have been a number of tragic stories in recent years, not just in Oregon, but across the country, about cases of elder abuse. How does this intersect with that?
Well, the way, of course, it can intersect, and I think in a lot of the stories this is the case, is, first of all, I just want to point out that there's a lot of good guardians out there, and there's a lot of good-hearted people doing this work that are trying to support somebody to be independent and maximize their self-reliance. On the other hand, there are some evildoers. So if somebody becomes another's guardian, and that person, for example, has money, it's a very easy way to exploit that person, mostly because there's such limited oversight of guardianships and conservatorships in Oregon.
I'm curious, when you talk about guardianships, is it from your experience, is it best to have a family member in that particular situation, or better to have a guardian who's sort of outside the family dynamic?
So I think you have to look at the person who needs support in their decision-making and try to understand who it is that they would choose. And that's one of the specific factors in law is who would this person choose? Because all of us know that we're going to work better with somebody who's our choice and we feel respects us and is going to treat us with dignity. So sometimes that's family, sometimes it's not.
Have you seen, I was kind of thinking about the difference between maybe institutional abuse, which might be, I suppose, in a hospital setting or a jail, versus personal abuse in a home. Is one more common than the other in Oregon?
Well, I think I have a hard time saying that one's more common. Obviously, when either happens, it's serious, and it's something that we're interested in as an agency because our first call is to respond to abuse, neglect, and make sure it's being investigated by the appropriate people, or if not, that we're going to step up and do that.
I'm interested if you're a neighbor down the street or a family member, and you see what you've got some serious questions about how an individual is being treated, about their guardianship. Does a person contact your agency or do you call the police? I mean, let's say it's just suspicions. You don't have any hard evidence.
Right. Well, so for Disability Rights Oregon, anybody can call our agency if they feel like somebody's being discriminated against based on disability. And certainly if somebody was being abused or mistreated by their guardian, that would fall within that bailiwick. So certainly we could be called. Obviously, police could be called, too, if it seems like it potentially rises to that level. And they always let you know if it does or not, if they're going to take a report.
Is your agency able to respond fairly quickly if somebody calls in with a concern?
Yes. If we need to, we can. I'll give an example. I was called, it was a number of years back, but about a person who was under guardianship who needed a blood transfusion, was not of any religious persuasion that would disallow that. But the guardian was of a religious persuasion that would disallow that. So the guardian wasn't allowing the medical people to do the blood transfusion. We were able to get into court on an emergency basis, and this person was able to get that blood transfusion and live. So if it's something on that order, we're going to try to move quickly if we can.
Are there any alternatives out there to guardianship?
There's so many alternatives to guardianship. So a power of attorney where you designate somebody to do certain decision-making or an advance directive for health care, again, the declaration for mental health treatment. But then even less formal than that is just people having family or friends that they rely on for different decision-making. There's a fancy term for that now, supported decision-making, but basically it's what I think most all of us do. You have a very serious decision. You reach out to the people who you think have information about that topic, and you take in that information, you make your decision. So I think that that's probably the most common, less restrictive alternative is reliance on others.
Go ahead.
Yeah. I was going to say, some people don't have that kind of network, and mm-hmm. So people who have absolutely no network and have no decision-making ability and no resources, we do have an Oregon Public Guardian that's able to take some people.
We're talking about guardianship this morning. You can join our conversation by calling 800-838-3760, or you can send us an email, jx@jeffnet.org. Before guardianship happens, is there anything like a medical evaluation that's required?
No. The medical evaluation is not required. What is required is a showing that the person cannot make decisions to such a degree that they're going to wind up in serious harm's way. So some people, of course, have a medical evaluation and some don't. There's no uniform requirement in terms of how do you define whether or not a person meets that standard.
And I understand that in the state of Oregon, there's a long-term care ombudsman and also an Oregon public guardian. How do you work with those folks?
Yeah, so we work closely with them. I personally am on the board for the Oregon long-term care ombuds for the last, I think, 4 years. Basically, we have a lot of the same clients. So the long-term care ombuds, they have residential facilities ombuds section, and those are people are essentially boots on the ground. They're going into different residences and foster homes and places and finding people whose rights are potentially being violated or who need some sort of advocacy assistance. Sometimes we'll get a call from them that it looks like it's more in our camp, which is we do legal services, provide legal services. Sometimes we'll reach out to long-term care, obviously, and sometimes we kind of collaborate on the same case. So basically, the goal really for both is to help citizens in Oregon who have disabilities live lives that are independent and self-reliant and have the maximum dignity.
If you were to give Oregon a letter grade for how they're doing right now on disability rights in general and guardianship in particular, could you do that or at least give an overview of where you think the state is going?
It would be hard to hone in on a specific letter grade. I do feel that in the near 20 years that I've been at this, there's been a lot of improvement and a lot of recognition that there needs to be improvement and interest and time and attention spent. I've been our organization has been part of this WINGS group that is a statewide efforts to improve guardianship. So I feel like we're really improving. I do feel like we have a long ways to go. And one key thing that I'll just point out is that a person who has the prospect of having a guardian, has objected, doesn't have funds to retain an attorney, but wants an attorney because they're going to go to a hearing where they're going to have to show that they're not incapacitated, which would be hard for all of us to do, I think, in some ways. They don't automatically get a court-appointed attorney because there isn't funding for that. And so I think that that's, I mean, there's many other things, but that's one major difficulty that people experience.
We've been speaking this morning with Jan Friedman from Disability Rights Oregon about guardianship. Your website, droregon.org, is that correct?
That is correct, yes.
All right. Thank you very much, Jan.